Hi, I'm Gail from Europod. Before enjoying your podcast, allow me to say a few words about Europe Talks Back. In the third season of Europe Talks Back, I want to uncover the topics that matter, or should matter, to all of us. From gender to bodies and sex, digital to migration and urban landscapes, and everything in between. Rather than focusing on macro-level policies, let's zoom in and talk to the brave activists and volunteers with lived experience, who are working directly with marginalized communities to further equity, justice, and liberation for all.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Europod.
10, 9, ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
So far, throughout the water series, we have been to South Africa, Bosnia and Herzegovina, France, etc., etc., and today, we're going a step further and taking you to space.
What happens if we run out of clean drinking water on planet Earth? Could we go to space to find some water? Is there even water in space? Could we get it from there? And if so, how would we do that? Or perhaps we could just move there altogether. And who does the water belong to anyway?
Most importantly, if you listen to the trailer of the series, you might remember that we would, at some point, discuss water as a rocket fuel. Well, today's the day. Today, we find out what's the deal with that. Welcome back to the Water Series. I'm Sonia Gatabishchan, international lawyer.
And I'm Zeynep Kosmi, data analyst and global shaper.
And we are your hosts for today. In today's episode on water and space, we are joined by Juanda Dalmau, faculty member of the International Space University in Strasbourg, and Tommaso Tonina, space engineer and alumnus of the International Space University.
Space and water are interconnected. Very often our professors ask our students, if you had to go to space and you could only take two things with you, what would they be? So I've been thinking about this myself, and I have a clear answer. What I would take to space is bread and water.
Juan gave us a clue that water would be important in space, and Tommaso further explains why it would be important to have water in space.
One, as we said already, for rocket fuel. You can actually arrive there with your tanks empty and leave again to the Earth. Second thing, obviously, you can drink it or use it for food, because most of the food in space is dehydrated, so you need to add water before eating. And as soon as you separate it, you can also use it for breathing, so you can have oxygen for yourself.
But that's not all. According to Tommaso, space is a very dangerous place due to radiation, and water proves indispensable, even in that respect.
As far as we know, it's one of the places with the highest concentration of radiation. In fact, in case of an extreme event, humans would die in a matter of minutes because of organ collapse. A very effective way to stop that is to put a shield between you and outer space. Very heavy materials are good at that. For example, lead. However, lead is very, very heavy. And a good alternative is water. So in fact, if you can put the water around your spacecraft, like a thin layer around it, this can help you block most of the radiation coming from outer space.
So far, we confirmed that it's a good idea to bring some water to space with you. Now, Can we find water in space?
Is there water in our solar system? And the answer is yes, there is plenty of water, actually. If we think about a couple of moons, just for an example, I'm talking about Ganymede and Titan, those moons have respectively 35 times and 18 times the amount of water we have on Earth. So I would say there is plenty of water out there.
So, while we are on the topic, how does that play out with the saying, where there is water, there is life?
So when we talk about water in space, it's pretty important to define one term, that is habitable zone. With this zone, we mean a particular distance around a star where it's cold enough and hot enough at the same time to have water in the three states, so solid, liquid, and gas. And especially the liquid phase is very important for the development of life. However, if we are looking for very complex forms of life, as we saw on this planet, we need to leave enough time for these forms of life to develop. If we just look at our neighbors, for example, Venus and Mars, so the closest planets to us, as far as we know, both of them had plenty of water on their surface a few billion years ago. The problem is that in that case, we are not sure on what happened, and we are not sure on why at the moment they are on one case a very dry and cold desert, and on the other side a very hot and a high pressure desert as well.
This is the sound of wind on Mars. For the first time, we can hear the wind blowing across the surface of Mars.
Perhaps the history and existence of water in space is not the easiest topic, and we might not have to pack our bags to move to other planets just yet. However, water exists in outer space, and in even greater quantities than those that we have on Earth. So we might as well try to learn if we could acquire some of it.
We can definitely mine water in space, and actually we can mine almost anything else. The current problem we have is that most of the technologies we need to do that are under development or they are being tested. In fact, the most difficult part of doing that, of extracting water from the moon, from Mars or comets or asteroids, is actually, first of all, getting there. Second, you know, doing all the operation, extraction, and so on. And third, bring the material, or in some cases, the comet and the asteroid itself, near our planet or, you know, in our orbit. In fact, as far as we know, just going to Mars is so dangerous in terms of radiation that probably most of the living organism that we know would die or have severe consequences by just the travel. This is due, as we said, to radiation on one side. On the other side is also due to the length of the travel. That is, at the moment, with current technology, it's between 6 months and 9 months.
I'm gonna step off the land now. It's one small step for man,
let's suppose we develop these advanced technologies. After all, we weren't sure if a man would ever walk the surface of the moon until Neil Armstrong demonstrated that it could be done. If we managed to mine water in space, who would it then belong to? Finders keepers?
It's a pretty challenging question. One answer might be to look at what happened, for example, on the ISS or in other space programs. Till now, even during the Cold War, we had a pretty good collaboration between countries that technically were enemies. I'm thinking about Russia and the US.
Russia says it is disappointed by the United States. Well, that's not new.
The United States has expressed its interest to hold talks with Russia.
Putin keeps learning he can take as much as he can and get away with it because the US in the past has not stood up to him.
Frankly, when you say the word Russia in Washington, it automatically brings a certain political charge around it.
At the time, probably, it was a good idea to do that, also for the technology that we needed. Nowadays, most of the, let's call them, space powers, they have their own technology. For example, back in the days, there was only one GPS system. Nowadays, a lot of countries have actually their own GPS system. So Russia has its own, China has its own, and the European Union as well. So at the moment, I'm seeing this new tendency to go back to a space race. For example, for the Moon and for Mars, this is the attempt that most countries are actually leading to.
Being an international lawyer, I was quite intrigued by the division of space resources, and so I researched this further. Apparently, in 1967, the Outer Space Treaty was signed, and it provided as follows.
The exploration and the use of outer space, including the Moon and other celestial bodies, shall be carried out for the benefit and in the interest of all countries, irrespective of their degree of economic or scientific development, and shall be the province of all mankind. Outer space, including the Moon and other celestial bodies, shall be free for exploration and the use by all states without discrimination of any kind, on the basis of equality and in accordance with international law, and there shall be free access to all areas of celestial bodies.
In other words, space resources should not belong to any country in particular. Rather, space should be explored and used for everyone's benefit. According to what Tommaso said, this indeed sounds tricky. On a good note, the Hague Space Resources Governance Working Group noticed that there is a need for a regulatory framework for space resource activities. And so, that is work in progress. I know for sure that I would want to be here some decades from now and witness a space court hearing. Oh, to be a fly on the wall. All the things that we were wondering about, whether you could mine and get water from space or even inhabit space, turn out to be possible, at least in theory at this point in history. Nonetheless, it somehow doesn't feel like a satisfactory conclusion. Perhaps the answers to our struggles lie a bit closer to home than we had anticipated. Namely, if I got one takeaway from this conversation, it's that space is complicated, at least no simpler than Earth. My fear is that if we went ahead and invaded it in pursuit of our goals, resources for our benefit, we would face the very same problems that we face on Earth. Or maybe even worse, someone could sue us in a court of space law. But in fact, space itself is quite fragile too. According to space law experts Sanjoti Malik and Rajeshwari Pillai Rajagopalan, comparing law of the seas with rules governing space is inadequate.
They say that the argument owing the fish, not the sea, cannot be applied to outer space, primarily because fish are living resources that can reproduce and therefore be renewable. Outer space resources, on the other hand, are depletable. Once harvested, they cannot be replenished. The analogy with fish and seas, therefore, is not a fair one, and its transposition to outer space and celestial bodies would be inaccurate.
In other words, if we don't learn how to preserve and manage the resources that we have, the water that we have, right here and right now, on this planet Earth, we will all lose the space race. But hopefully, you didn't get ahead of yourselves just yet. Just because we have some work to do over here, space is not all that useless to us. According to Juan, space is in fact vital in managing our down-to-earth business.
If you want to understand climate change, you need to go to space. This may sound a little bit odd, but that's what scientists tell us. If you look at the 50 parameters that are telling us how climate is evolving, 50 different types of data, temperatures, humidities, wind, etc. About two-thirds of these measurements can only be made from space. So this tells you how important space is for the environment on Earth.
Tommaso further elaborates on what can be seen from space.
From space, it's possible to detect, monitor a lot of events, a lot of activities that might compromise the water that we have. I'm thinking about, for example, illegal fishing. I'm thinking about pollution of water bodies. And these are things that you can easily do from space.
As tempting as it would be to resort to a simple solution to our water issues, such as, I guess one could call that stealing at this point, resources from space, that solution, even if it were possible right away, would actually not solve our problems. The rash human behavior that led us to this point of water scarcity would likely only repeat itself on another planet and on a larger scale. It is therefore vital that we look at the various dimensions of water and we approach water with respect and responsibility. The commendable work of space researchers will not go in vain, though. In fact, it is already vital in creating our earthly solutions to our earthly problems. Hopefully, we will use it wisely.
Across the 6 episodes of the Water series, we learned about different water dimensions. We established that water is a scarce resource, and that more cities are facing an increasing number of day zero events where they risk running out of water.
We followed the journey of the brave women of Krušica who fiercely fought against small hydropower plants in order to protect our river, reminding us of just how precious of a resource water is. We also spoke to a judge from the European Court of Human Rights, and we determined that the right to water, albeit a developing, is not a foolish concept.
Every human society is situated near water. Water, in conjunction with culture, places limits on societies. Wars are fought over water. Water forces people to move from their places of origin and to reach agreements on what happens upstream and downstream.
Finally, while we can harvest hope and space research so that we could one day benefit from its resources, including water, we should also harvest hope in ourselves, in our ability to use and manage water responsibly.
Would you fight for water? Would you travel for water? Would you unite over water?
Thank you for listening to the Water Series. It was an honor to share this journey with you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Do you want to hear more podcasts that get to the bottom of things that stand out in the ambient noise? Join Europod. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and our newsletter. Follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram. Discover our brand new website at www.europod.eu and join us in our fight. Europod. Clear the noise. Start to listen.